Welcome back to the Mindful World Summit. I'm Dr. Stacy, and I'm joined today by Gabriella Van Rey, who is a kindness expert. She is the founder of the Dare to Be Kind movement, the author of 3 books, a keynote speaker, who delivers talks that reveal how kindness can be used in practical ways to build safer communities and heal our relationships. She draws from science, she brings her full sense of humor and her tremendous cross-cultural knowledge to this conversation. She has talked to thousands of people all over the world. She's been on platforms that have had her reach millions. And so we're incredibly grateful that she's here today to lend us her wisdom and teach us all about kindness. Welcome, Gabriella, to the summit.
Thank you, Dr. Stacy. And it's an honor for me to be on this summit.
Oh, and we are so glad you're here. Let me ask you, how did you come to be an expert on kindness?
I was just smiling too when you introduced me like that. I still smile because I think if we had looked around 20 years ago, this would not be a profession, right? A kindness expert. And yeah. I was known about 8 years ago as an anti-bully expert. But because my take on bullying itself was so different and interesting to a lot of people, because I kind of actually talked more about kindness than the bullying aspect of it. And so from there, I kind of rolled into the kindness expert. And I believe that, and I believe this wholeheartedly from my own life, is that I can count every single person that has been kind to me. And I remember them, it's a feeling. I might not know their name, but I remember the whole situation. Mm-hmm. And so I know the power of kindness. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, with all these social issues that are plaguing our society, not just in America, but all over the world, and the problems are getting tougher and tougher, I said, we really need this kindness. And as a last thing, I just want to say is a quote that I have that I put on a ball that I call the ball of human kindness. It says, we as a society have dropped the ball on human kindness. Let's pick it up together.
Okay. And I have to say, with the kind of dialogue that's happening all around us, there is a pull towards and a need to develop that as a skill. And I love that you talk about it as a skill. But before we even get into that, I think your story in itself, your own journey, is really compelling. And I'm wondering, for people who don't know you, because this didn't just come out of nowhere.
No.
Right? It's come from something. And when we are empowered to put this into the world, there's some real emotion and purpose behind it. So What has inspired you to take this on?
So when I started, and sometimes on stage, I still will, sometimes it's so emotional that I'll shed a tear in frustration sometimes, and sometimes in sadness for the little Gabriella that's telling her story, is just that I am one of the first cross-cultural adoptions in the world. So I was adopted in 1966 when adoption was unheard of. But then cross-cultural adoption was unheard of, meaning I am from a different ethnicity than my adopted parents. And I was born at the foot of the Himalaya Mountains in Pakistan, then called East Pakistan. And I grew up in a convent the first 3 years of my life where there were nuns that happened to take children. And I was one of the 50 children there. And I personally never knew that there was anything wrong with me until I say that with a smile, but also with doses of pain, obviously, until I set foot in the West. And once I set foot in the West, I I knew there was something wrong. I'll just give you a real simple example. I flew all the way. I took three different plane rides, arrived at Schiphol Amsterdam Airport, and I knew the moment my mother saw me, my future adopted mother saw me, that I had failed. And I think for any parent that listens to this, our children have such antennas, you know, such antennas that we sometimes lose as adults. But in that antenna, in that really pivotal moment, she looked at me with such worry and such, I almost knew what she was thinking. She was thinking, what did I do? Who is this stranger that I'm supposed to love now, right? And the truth is, we sometimes have these issues when we have a biological baby that we can't bond. And so I always tell people, it's okay that you don't bond. But what my mother did is she pushed that away instead of being conscious of it. If she had been conscious of it and actually communicated, I think our entire life would have been different, both hers and mine. And so by not being accepted, and my dad kind of took the brunt because he just felt sorry for that little child. And I had a lazy eye, so it was turned in completely. I had about 3 millimeters of hair on my head, so I looked quite different. Just so that you
okay.
And then once I went to school, because what people don't understand is I learned the language very quickly, because Urdu, the native Pakistani language, is a derivative of Arabic. It's in that family.
Okay.
And so the Dutch language is very guttural. So for me, it was a cinch, literally, to speak guttural, to have that enormous ch, like the Germans have. And and so I still have that in my language, and that was easy peasy. And so I did learn the language within a month, and I was sent to school. And within that moment, again, I knew I had failed. And so nobody taught me, Dr. Stacey, nobody taught me that I was a worthy human being. And to tell you the truth, I only realized that started to around the age of 40. And I think that in itself is just sad. Why would it take you 40 years to understand that we're all good enough, that we're all human beings, and that, you know, I always say it on stage, I'm hopelessly flawed, but incredibly happy. And the flaws are not going to go away. They're just there.
Yeah.
But I don't call them something negative. They're just flaws.
Yeah.
That society decides that they're flaws, right? Mm-hmm. So what I did is I took my pain, made it into my greatest strength, which in turn makes me the cause's best ally. And that's what I've become. You know, I am my cause's best ally. So the one thing I remember is kindness. I remember that incredible feeling that you just go, oh my God, someone cares about me. And it was, that's always, till this day, when there is a little child, you know, when you're driving a car and in the rear view mirror, I was going to say it in French. I'm good. The rear view mirror, you see that child that's waving at you in the car behind you. Ah, that just, see those things. That's what life is about. They just, to me, I take those moments, jump over a puddle and know that you miss it, even though you're a lot older and wiser, I still miss it. is life. That is kindness. That's what I try to teach.
Can I just tell you something? When you just talked about the little kid waving at the back, you know what happened for me? I thought about your child self waving with kindness at you.
Thank you. I love that. I love that. That's very funny because my team here, they all call me G, as if Gabriella is a long name, but I went from Gabriella to Gabby to G. So I don't think they can shorten it anymore. But it's very funny. They call me Little G and Big G. So they call me both because I have something that is truly special. One thing that I will say proudly is that I have kept my wonder. The wonderment of a child is still within me and active 170%. It is, yeah, that wonderment to carry your sleeve on your heart. I really don't care how many times someone stomps on it. I will continue to do that.
Mm.
It's just something that they can't break in me. It's, yeah, there is a childish naivete that I really believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the good of people. I believe in the good of myself. And I believe that if people give me a chance to listen, mm-hmm. and that I can do for one moment this. I'm not asking you to change. I'm not asking you to be another human being. I'm asking you to just open the blinders for 1 second. Let in the message of kindness, listen to the words, and especially laugh at the analogies that I have. And then go home and go, 3 days from now, you go, what did she say? I get it. And then they call me. It really happens a lot. And I'm always available. Yeah, they call because it was so simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
But in the simplicity, we realize how hard it is to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't talk about kindness, but I talk about daring to be kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's a dare to yourself, a dare to others. How can, you know, and I think this comes from my own upbringing, I had to dare to be Gabriella. I had to dare to not be this victim, to not be this orphan Annie, and to say, yes, I am brown in a predominantly Caucasian world. So what? So what? But that's so hard to do. That it took me a few years.
Yeah. But being the outsider is hard.
Yeah. And not belonging is universal. And that is something I did not realize, Dr. Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
If you had asked me at 20, I would have told you that belonging was due to being an adoptee or maybe a foster child or the black sheep of the family. But now I know that it's all of us. All of us. All of us. There's no exception. At one moment in time, did not fit in a group, did not fit in our family, or do not fit in work. All of us. We know the moment. We remember it because it's so painful. And then you have two choices. And this one has a lot to do with parenting. The conformity. You know, my mother used to say, oh, Gabriella, we love you if you do bam, bam, bam.
Mm-hmm.
What if you could say to a child, sweetheart, I love you. Society tells us that you cannot drive through a red light. So please stop when I teach you how to drive. But stay and be yourself. Be a well-rounded human being. We don't do that. We say it's mm-hmm. my way or the highway.
Right.
And
right.
That's where we meet. And that's where I like organizations like yourself.
Yeah.
That you bring this to the foreground, that you bring the awareness into conscious parenting.
Yeah.
The conscious parenting of my mother was, if you don't do what I say, I'll hit you. Because that was our time back then. And there was nothing, you know, and I, for the longest time, I didn't even call that abuse because I was taught that it is normal that your parents hit you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only later, I would say, in my last 10 years that I really realized that that's total abuse. Mm-hmm. It's abuse of power.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And so speaking of that, I mean, the human need to connect, to be part of the group, that we feel very anxious, and for survival, you know, evolutionary reasons, that our survival is dependent on being part of the group.
It is totally dependent on that. And the problem that I see in American schools here is that these children are so aware. They might not know the word conformity, but they are ready to conform at whatever price to be part of the group. Mm-hmm. Even if that means hurting someone, even if that means stabbing someone, even if that means stealing, even if it means shooting. See, this is what parents really don't get.
Okay.
We, the moment we go to school, 85% is spent outside of the home. So parents, you end up not being that important to us, the children. Mm-hmm. And we forget that. The parent forgets that. And so this child knows what it was, knows right from wrong, but that's easy to say for them, right? Because in the meantime, you have a group here that I want to be part of, because there was something in that group that made them want me. And that, it's like when you choose the wrong husband or the wrong partner or the wrong spouse, same thing. You choose it sometimes not because you love them, but because they showed that they cared. And you are so desperate for that little bit of care, that human caring, that you will go there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the problem. And that's not even bullying. This is the problem of all of us. Right. And so I always explain it with little M&Ms. So if I red is my favorite color and all the kids know it. And so if I say to them, I'm that red little M&M, right? And then I show a slide where the red little M&M starts coming into the group and becomes a little bit yellow. And then the children, they shout in an assembly, Gabriella, you're fake. And maybe that's not the right word, but they are right. They know what conformity is. They just don't know the word. They know that I will do anything to change to be part of the popular crowd.
Mm-hmm. So are they getting upset about that?
Yeah, they get upset because they hope that I'm strong enough to be me. And I said to them, I was not. And then they're like, why are you talking to us? You know, if you were so pitiful, so they better be a little nice to me. But right, it's important to include them and to show them analogies that they can relate to, because they do it too. And I think that's why they recognize it. And for the adult, I'm so sorry, but the adult does it every time. And what does the adult, in my opinion, that conforms the most is the adult that comes home at the end of the day and takes one drink, two drinks, three drinks, or that takes drugs. And that is like not a addict, but that just social, they take the edge off every single day because they have to be someone that they don't want to be.
Right.
And then when they come home, you finally can be yourself. But then who is self?
Right.
And that's where basically the whole self-care, that awareness of self-care. One of the things that I believe, as especially the parents, we are taught that the child is more important than we are. And that if we don't put our children first, we are egotistical maniacs, right? And I, as a woman, feel that even stronger, I think, than most of the men that I meet. And that is because we women think we're super duper, right? We're women, we have to be lovers, we have to cook the dinner, we have to be the nurturers, we have to be everything. Wow. Duh, we don't have to do anything. We really don't, but we think we do. And so I think our religion, our culture, our society, all of that dictates that we cannot say no. And I have said no more than once from the age of 40. And you know what? I still get flack. When I say no today to someone, you know what they say? You're not very good kindness expert, are you? And I smile gently back and I say, I cannot be kind if I don't fill my cup. And if you understand that, super. But if you are kind to me because I need it right now, then you will see, I will come back to you. Give me 2 days with magic, but I need to rest.
Right, right.
And most people are so surprised that you are able to be vulnerable, that you are able to actually truly communicate, and then you will never have reactiveness. That is a big, big thing.
What you also did there, you challenged them to be kind.
Yep. I challenged them to, because I'm not in the mood. My plate is full. Mm-hmm. And that's how I do it. Because otherwise, what do you think I would do? I would shout. Mm-hmm. And why do I know this so well? Because I did that. Yeah. My mother always shouted. And mm-hmm. I learned at 11, 12, that if I didn't remove myself from the situation, I was going to be 300% hurt. I would have shouted. I learned action reaction at that moment. We become as mean as the people we are with. It's the same thing. Put a child in an environment of only swearing, he or she will start swearing without even knowing that they do it. That's just a tiny little example of that.
Right.
But you know what? And maybe the parents are going to like this. For all the parents out there that take a flight, it's the first thing you learn just before takeoff during security, always put the oxygen mask on you first. Mm-hmm. Why? Because if you fall, and I meant fall, like if you lose consciousness, there's no way you can help your child or anyone next to you.
Absolutely.
And that principle we do not do.
Right.
We don't dare to say, my cup is not full tonight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or, and if that's four nights in a row, that's okay too.
Right.
It shouldn't be ridiculized. And so the awareness of self-care, whatever that is for someone, needs to be taught on a regular basis to the parents so that they can teach it to the children.
Right. And they can embody it themselves. Yeah.
And for me, the first self-care is understanding to communicate. Right. Because if I can't tell you, Dr. Stacy, that I'm tired, how are you going to get a good interview? No, I'm not. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. I have canceled in the last 8 years. I have canceled 2 interviews in my life. Only 2.
Mm-hmm.
I've rebooked. And I was totally honest. Not a lie. Nothing. Mm-hmm. I came even on camera and I said, I am so tired today. It just it's not in me.
Right.
Can't do it. So it's not like I was hiding. So that's maybe the best lesson that I can give here. The best tip is be honest, be vulnerable, and then challenge them to be gentle with you.
Right.
We are allowed to ask that.
Okay.
And none of us do.
Right. And so it's these pressures that you were alluding to earlier in terms of the courage to be yourself, to dare to be kind to self.
Yeah.
And that goes against this pressure to conformity. And I'm wondering about, you were talking about your work with kids in schools. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we could talk a little bit about bullying in its, of itself, because it strikes me as a way of enacting that social control among people who are feeling disempowered because they're kids.
For me, the first thing about bullying that people need to understand is the definition.
Okay.
For me, bullying, this is my definition that I made up as I went along. Bullying is a form of meanness, but it's a form of meanness that continues day after day until you're so paralyzed with fear that you cannot function anymore. And that's the part parents need to understand. Don't say to your kids, go beat up the other one. Doesn't help. You're paralyzed. And that's a terrible thing for parents. Parents think, oh, my kid is being bullied. The other one must be so bad. But 2 things. I don't call the bully bully. I don't call them that. I call them instigators.
Because, instigators.
Yeah, the truth is you and I have had moments in life, I definitely have, and I totally have no problem in admitting that, that I have been mean. I have not been a bully, but I have been mean. Or I have been snooty or snippy or yes. And so we are instigators and we make a conscious choice of being kind. We make a conscious choice of being the victim. We make a conscious choice of being the bully. Now, let me explain that.
Mm-hmm.
The bully and the victim are mirror images. What does that mean? That means that there is nothing wrong with your child and nothing wrong with the other child. Nothing. There's nothing wrong with these children. What is wrong is that nobody teaches them how that they can react. And so both of these children take a total different view how to react. So one says, you're not going to get me. I'm going to strike before you can strike me.
Okay.
Right? So that becomes the bully. You're never going to get me. And so when they see a kid already coming towards them, they pounce. I see it over and over.
Hmm.
The victim sees the person coming and goes, I'm scared. Yeah, yeah, there is something wrong with me. I know it, right?
Hmm.
And there's just two completely conscious decisions, but they were made, and they are made very early. And it is up to the parents to discover that behavior, because you see it in the kid. You will see glimpses of it because they react to you a little bit vicious too with that don't come too near. And then I always say to the parents, nobody strikes another human being coming from a positive place. Nobody. What does that mean? Let's say there are 7 billion people on this planet. 6.9 billion people are, with other words, in a negative space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they go back and forth, back and forth. And there's no other way, because that's all we've been taught. What were we taught? Defend yourself, speak up, don't let the other kid get it. And the last one, which is a big one, I wasn't taught that. But in today's world, we're taught that. He or she is the competition. We compete. We compete. Girls compete for the boy that they don't even have yet. It's beyond attention. When you're 11. We compete for the best grade. We compete as athletes. We compete, we compete, we compete. How can you have friends in competition? The strange part is you can, but it depends what kind of sport you play. Is it a sport that is tennis? It's only you. Is it a team sport? It's all kinds of things. So all that depends on your parents and what sport or hobby your parents push you in, because that too makes a big difference. And so, again, I think if parents understand that there's nothing wrong with either children, that would be the biggest step. Second step is do not put these children in a box. It's already hard enough being them. It is a different day and age than in your time. It really is. They live things that we haven't lived.
What are the big differences? What are the big differences?
I give you a difference. I was bullied merciless, but I had kind of a gutsy attitude, and every day I tried again, though. But the child today that is in my shoes that get bullied every day, it never stops. They go home and it continues because it's in their smartphones. The bullying continues online, which I have honed to the word cyber torment. See, all of this, your entire summit, if you look at day by day, it's, I love the way you guys did the build up, by the way, with the days. It's it's, we need to go back to basics. Who are we? How can we truly give? Once we understand that, we go to relationships and how do relationships flow. But in relationships, for example, we need to really understand to not be in competition, to not throw the colleague under the bus when I'm in corporate. I tell you, when, you know, like, let's say I'm a new mom. And instead of the file, I'll pull a diaper out of my purse, right? Because that happens. It happened to me when I was a new mom. I had the diaper instead of, and I went, oh God, it's on the kitchen counter. You know, and colleagues want to throw you under the bus because they are so scared of bosses. We are too scared of them.
Right.
And so I tell you that if you don't throw your colleague under the bus, but you say, hey, yeah, I got this. This was late. And you just make up a story and you protect the person in the room, I tell you, it's fantastic. Because when that person comes out, you bump to each other and the other person says to you, thank you, you had my back.
Right.
And that is what we need. That is what we want. And that we don't see anymore. And if we start doing that as parents, what do you think the kids are going to do? They're not going to tattletale. They're going to help a child that has, and it goes even further, a child that has no lunch, a child that always sits alone, because they will see it. But parents don't talk about these things at the dinner table anymore. Dinner is scattered all over the house. One kid pops a whatever kind of pot pie in, see, I don't even know what it is. A pot pie in a microwave. I hope I did that well. And the other eats a pizza, and one eats at 6, one eats at 8, and the sports club. It's ships that pass in the night.
Yeah.
You need to have at least 3 meals a week together if you don't want to fall apart as a family. And I'm really serious, guys.
Yeah.
When your family falls apart, just think. 3 days, that's all we're asking. 3 days out of 7. Spend them together. Throw all your cell phones in a pile. All the gadgets. Parents too.
Yes.
I hear from children often that parents kind of keep them, you know, under the table or in a restaurant. No, no, no. Everyone. And then tell your child what happened at work. They're interested. Even if you think they're not listening, they're listening.
Absolutely. And maybe even have that as the discussion of what would you have done, or what was the, you know, what did, and the inner workings of what's happening within the parent, talking about their inner choices.
And then I always say two things that people are not aware of. Bullying and communication both have these two points in common. The tone and the silence. Both can be perceived as bullying. Like if I go at work and I go to the coffee area and everyone always falls still when I arrive, at a certain point, you're going to think there's something wrong with you. You are. You're going to look behind you in the beginning. You're going to think it's your dress or your jacket or whatever. But in the end, silence is a killer for children too. I see children do this all the time, especially girls.
Okay.
Then the other one is the tone. And I always say jokingly, and this is easy enough for everyone to understand, when you say something and you go, oh God, I sound like my mother, or I sound like my dad, that's the tone. And you know which one it is.
Right.
That's the tone that can't pass at work, it can't pass in the home either.
Right. Okay.
If that's that little voice that you hold nice at work, hold it nice at home. And if you can't, I always say to the parent, walk out of the room. Just say, I got to go to the washroom. Be right back.
Okay. But then the opportunity at that point to go within and figure out where that voice comes from.
I always say, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath and say it. Say it. Say, I hear you, I know you need me, but I can't be there for you just yet. Let me finish cooking, and then you and I are going to sit down. You can tell me anything you want. We don't do that. That's where we kind of started with this, right?
That's
self-care. But instead we shout, instead we react to the kid, because the kid doesn't know you had a bad day. So the kid just stands there going, did you hear, mom? Did you hear, mom? I had an A plus. Did you hear, mom? I am the class valedictorian. I am. And the parent just goes, yeah. Kid is like ready to.
So those moments when the connection breaks down.
Yeah. Connection breaks down both ways. And if you teach it to yourself, you can teach it to them.
Right. Okay. So if I'm understanding you, it's the kindness is a full circle kind of thing, where we're needing to recognize the need for ourselves to be kind to self. We need to model that for our kids.
Absolutely.
And recognize that kids that are struggling and in direction, maybe acting that out.
Absolutely.
Relationships with each other.
And there's one thing that I hear kids complain about 24/7 is when they have that enormous courage to talk to a father or mother, mm-hmm. when they finally get up that nerve, mm-hmm. Usually the parents kind of mess it up. And I'll tell you how they mess it up. The child has, you know, it's a one-time shot that you have, unfortunately. And the child comes to you and says, Mom, this is really important, or Dad, this is really important. And then they start talking. And what parents do is we interrupt because we hate, and I speak for myself when I say this too, we hate to hear the pain in their voice. That's our first trigger. God, my kid is hurting. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, because that's so painful to listen to, we go, well, yeah, kid, listen to me. In my day, let me fix this here for you. Mm-hmm. It's not your day. Mm-hmm. Kid tunes out. Don't interrupt. Don't fix. Listen. Mm-hmm. Listen. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when that child is totally finished and your heart is in your shoe, mm-hmm. then you say, Johnny, Marie, I just took two names.
Yeah.
Okay, Johnny, would you like me to help you? Or do you have this? Hmm. And you will see, Johnny is just like in awe because now he gets to think. He gets to actually think mm-hmm. what he needs of his mother okay. or his father.
Right.
That's new to them. That is okay. so mind-boggling when you give them a choice. Mm-hmm. And now the child has to say, and I've been there when children said, no, but let me get back to you. I'm going to try something. I just thought, and they don't want to share yet. Let okay. them walk away. They'll be so happy because the radars are working, right? Mm-hmm. And then when they come back to you, means it didn't work. And then be open to hear what they tried and then mm-hmm. give whatever advice you have. And it can only be what you know. And the kid mm-hmm. knows that.
Okay. But giving them lots of room to problem solve, to be empowered and even looking for solutions. And kind of communicating in a very subtle way that you have some resources within you. Go explore them. And I'm here.
And I give you another one. And this one is really important to me. I teach ownership of one's uniqueness.
Yes.
What is that? Well, when I was young, I told my dad what happened at school and, you know, the bullying and apart from the color skin and I knew he wasn't going to understand because he was Caucasian, right? Mm-hmm. And so he said, you go back to school and you tell them you're Dutch. So I did. I said, can't you see I'm Dutch? And all the kids said, no, not too much. And so, yeah, I thought it was Dutch. Go figure. Mm-hmm. And so I always take the example of a little obese child.
Okay.
The obese child, when it's very young, comes to their mom. The first time, that might be 3, that might be 5, that might be 8, but they come. The first time, they always come. Every parent can remember that they came the first time. They don't come the second time, though. So it's up to us. It's rotten, huh? That we're so tested. Mm-hmm. So the child comes and says, Mom, they call me fat at school. And then it's kind of silent because the child cannot say part 2, which is the pain. It cannot. It's kind of blocked, right? The parent says, oh, sweetheart, who said that? I'm going to go and talk to the mother. Oh, God, that's exactly what the kid doesn't need or doesn't want. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tell me which kid. I don't like that kid at all. Blah, blah. Suddenly about the kid, right?
Yeah.
But there's a problem. The boy still doesn't know if it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big problem. So if you're called gay, if you're called fat, if you're called lesbian, if you're called whatever dirty word, if you're called brown, if you're called foreigner, Mm-hmm. We need to get the parents to let the child give mm-hmm. the answer, not us.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I will sit with the child an hour, 3 hours, until the child says, I guess I am fat. And then the tears just roll and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it. Sit in silence. Don't touch your child. That's my advice. I know it sounds very harsh, but it isn't. Let them be in their energy. Let them get the sadness out. If you don't let them do this, follow them in their adulthood forever.
Okay.
Let them get until the child totally hiccups and finishes, and you say, and does it really make a difference with who you are? Again, push the question to your child. Mm. You know what the child says? I guess not. It's a novelty. Mm. Yeah, it can be fat. But we don't realize that. So now when you go back to the bully or the instigator, you say, yeah, I'm fat. Yeah, what's your problem? Because the pain has already been dealt with. The pain doesn't totally go away. I'm not a miracle worker either, but the pain doesn't totally go away. I still get upset when someone calls me peanut butter. That's what they did in Holland.
Okay.
And it's upsetting. It took 30 years, I think, before I ate peanut butter again. But the point is, if that sadness is dealt with, if they say, yes, I am fat. And then you say, was that so hard?
Mm-hmm.
It was. Okay, then. Now, what can I help you with, young man?
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And I tell them, I'm little. I'm 4'11". Keep hoping. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the kid goes, do we all have that? I said, we do. All of us.
Yeah.
And the mirror is not our friend.
Mm.
The only friend, the only way you can see your beauty is through you. I tell that to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, because you tell me something about me. I tell you something about you that I see.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So yes. Owning the uniqueness.
Own your uniqueness. Mm-hmm. Say it. Say it to yourself. Yes, I am fat. So what? I am a foreigner. I am an immigrant. And yes, I make mistakes in English.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Right.
You got all the stigmas out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my stigmas are maybe not autistic or maybe not those things, but we all have these stigmas.
Right.
And people try to put it on you, the label. Yeah. And it's up to you to say, I know my label. Thank you very much. Got it.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I have to think that's very disarming. Because there's nothing, if somebody who's in that space is projecting that onto you, like something that stands out and they're going to twist it or make it something is inherently wrong with you. If you don't put energy to it, then it kind of
it fades away.
Yeah.
I promise you it fades away. Mm-hmm. And then one thing I want parents to know is that if you don't deal with this bullying, don't think it goes away. Because the child thinks that too. If you don't deal with that, there's one huge problem, really huge, is your victim child can become a bully in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I know many kids that I deal with now as an adult that say, I was a victim and now they're never going to get me again. Mm-hmm. I am a manager and I'm going to get them.
Right. Yes, absolutely. That can happen. Okay. And so an interesting take on Gabriella, really interesting in terms of, you know, not running away from a place of pain, but to actually hold space for what the child is bringing and holding ourselves back from intervening too much. Like really but also there is something about believing in the resiliency of your child, that it will come if I can just create the space for them to be however they need to be. Yeah. And there's a natural process that I can allow to unfold.
And especially for, and I'm going to pull the media here in a little bit, young girls, and when I say young, They're incredibly young, Dr. Stacey. We're talking 10.
Yeah.
A lot of kids have sex already at that age in America. So, they don't call it sex because they say it's oral sex, but to me it's sex. I mean, sex is sex. I mean, you know. And I could make a couple of smart jokes here, but I'm not going to.
I think the parents are already traumatized with the 10-year-old girl having sex.
I come from Europe, so I'm not that traumatized, but I was shocked. They couldn't have seen it from me outwardly, but I am shocked. And so they are pushed very, very early to show their bra. And the boys take a picture, and then it's all over the internet. And Snapchat is the worst app that your young child can be on. And don't think they're on Facebook. They just do that to appease you. They are not on Facebook. They are all on Vine, Instagram, Snapchat, but they have they have an account on Facebook just to show you that they're doing a few things. But the real accounts are somewhere else. So I always say these phones, these smartphones, are weapons in the wrong hands. And you give them freely. You give them as if they're a gift. You give them without any education because you lack the education. I'm sorry. I know that's tough to hear, but that's the truth. Yes. And if you buy an iPhone, I can only tell you that for $99, your child can get free classes at any Apple store. You can get free classes with your child at any Apple store. Be involved. Your child can look up how to have oral sex in 5 seconds. Your child can look up how to create a noose to commit suicide. They don't need us for information.
Right.
Now, I tell them that if they don't ask us, they miss the experience that we have that doesn't come with Google.
Yes.
Right? Google just gives you an answer.
Whatever. Yes.
But the answer doesn't have heart. The answer doesn't have humanity in it. It's just a blatant answer.
Yes.
And so I say to them, would you let your 16-year-old drive a car
without, lessons,
without a license? The answer is no. Then my question would be to all parents, so why do they have a smartphone? To make life easier on you? Hello? Do not give them that in hand until you're knowledgeable.
Okay.
And then be part of their lives. Teach, ask them to teach you. If, for example, today people see this and they say, okay, I hear you, Gabriella, but my child already has a phone. What do I do? Then you say, okay. You go to your child. You say, I just got an Instagram account, or I would like an Instagram account. Can you help me? In the beginning, it's a little hard, you know, especially the girls. Do I have to? But then once they're busy, they actually love teaching something to the parents. And this is the occasion to start asking.
Right, you start talking.
How many friends do you have? And is there a lot of judgments on Instagram? Because the reason I want Instagram is I'm a bit fed up in Facebook with all the judgments of everyone. And I thought pictures might be nicer. Open the dialogue. See what happens.
Let's come into their world and so that you can have a real conversation.
And I think that's really important with the media consumption.
Yes.
Because I'm not there to say, you know, it's the same thing about guns. The gun alone doesn't kill anyone. You know, media by itself doesn't kill anyone. My mother thought I was going to go to hell that I listened to Angie of the Rolling Stones. And look at me. I'm still here.
Kindness expert.
Yeah. And so you know what I mean. I mean, every generation has something. I mean, for me, it's rap. I just can't build my head around it. I just miss lyrics and I miss, but sure, I can understand that you like it. So I'm not saying don't consume. I'm just saying don't let your child consume with education.
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of what we do. The TV is not a babysitter. The smartphone is not a babysitter that you can text them and say, oh, pop the pizza in the microwave. I'll be down in 5 minutes.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I do know that most parents have 2 to 3 jobs, but the reason you have 2 to 3 jobs is to buy these.
Okay. All right. So becoming
conscious. I just want to kind of put that in there.
Yeah. Conscious of our choices. And also the need to be actively involved with their children and in their world, creating the foundation for dialogue in a place where we create that space, taking care of ourselves and also taking care of just opportunity to really, truly connect.
Gabriella, if you do a panel,
yeah,
I would love to come.
Okay. I'm gonna take you up on that.
That's my passion, the panels, because that's when the public can really see a dialogue.
All right. Okay.
Different experts.
Gabriella, we're gonna hold you to that. Okay.
You're more than welcome.
Excellent. Gabriella, there's so much great stuff that you provided and thank you so much. I'm wondering if there's one thing that you would like parents, our viewers, to take away today that they could action today to really have a big impact on themselves and their families. What would that be?
The first thing is really remember how you want to be treated.
Okay.
Be very conscious that the 3 minutes that you stop for your child or for yourself are so important, the rest of the world will wait.
Okay.
Every time you take those 3 minutes a day to do something for yourself or for that child, miracles happen in your own life. And that is part of kindness to you. And thinking that you're always responsible that the boss is happy or someone else is happy, or no, take that time. I take those 3 minutes. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. You will not notice it after a while. You'll get so used to doing it. It will enrich your life by thousandfold.
Okay. Gabriella, thank you so much for that. If people want to understand where you're speaking next, engage with you, connect with your teachings, how can they do that?
Okay. Well, the first thing, I would never type in my last name.
Okay.
Too complicated.
Okay.
So go to gabriella.global.
Okay.
Because I'm global, I'm globetrotter. Mm-hmm. And that's where you will find all my public speaking and all that kind of stuff that I do on a business level. And then daretobekindmovement.global is our movement. Mm-hmm. And there I have to passionately ask you, follow us, be part of the movement. It is so easy. We're asking people to be kindness instigators and do one act of kindness a day if you can, and otherwise 1 a week within your 2 mile radius. Mm. Don't go far. We are the drop that are the difference in the world. And that little drop that you drop on one human being in your environment has an incredible ripple effect. And you might not know it today. You might not know it in a week, but often it comes back. And then you go, oh my God, that child or that person that was like 6 years ago, what, you remember? And then you hear what they've become because of something you did.
Amazing.
And even if it's just standing in Starbucks and reading the name tag of someone, just that, when you see that they're a bit snippy, read the name tag and say, Marion, how are you? They'll look up.
Okay. So the Dare to Be Kind movement, I'm thinking whole families could be involved in that.
We have so much. And we're on the world tour. So we're in Little Rock. We have a map.
Okay.
And the map has no dates because sometimes we stayed, like in Albuquerque, we stayed 4 days instead of 2.
Okay.
Because of work. So we'll track back. We're going north, and then we're coming all around the East Coast, and then we track back. So anytime I'm anywhere within a 100-mile radius from you, I will deviate and come to your school, come to your community, come to your churches pro bono. We're having the corporates pay for it. So if a corporation on the road listens to this and they ask me for a talk, then we'll have to charge them a little bit more than usual to keep us on the road doing good things.
Oh my goodness, a kindness tour? Are you kidding me? That's incredible. I love it. Okay, people, follow this woman. Okay. To end today, I'm wondering, Gabrielle, I mean, you have, again, so many nuggets of wisdom, so much that you've shared today, but I'm wondering if you could just leave our interview with your most profound statement.
The wave that knocks you down is also the wave that lifts you back up.
I love that. Okay. Okay. On that note, Gabriella, thank you so much for everything you're doing in the world, everything that you shared with us today. We will come and find you on tour or invite you to come to us. Right?
I'll be very close to Toronto in a month, I think.
Okay. All righty. Will you keep us posted, please, because we'd love to have more from you. Thank you so much for all you're doing, and thank you
again. Thank you, Dr. Stacey, and thank you for doing what you're doing, because this is awesome to create the awareness. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.